A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connection to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals, and indeed their aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. Demi Abadeo was just 41 years of age when she was diagnosed with breast cancer early last year, 6 months after she had first found a lump in her breast. Following 4 months of chemotherapy, 16 sessions of radiotherapy, and soon-to-be reconstructive surgery, Demi joins us today to share important messages on the importance of good breast health, and especially amongst women in the African community in Ireland. Demi, you're very welcome here today. It's so lovely to meet you. And thank you for taking the time to share your story with More Than a Lump podcast community. Before we go into your breast cancer story, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thank you for having me. And my name is Demi. I've been living in Ireland for about 20 years. I work with the homeless before my cancer, breast cancer diagnosis, and I have a son. His name is Tommy. Yeah, that's me.
Super. Take us back then to those months during the pandemic when you obviously noticed something was different.
In June 2020, I think it was on the 15th of June. So I woke up in the morning, did all my house chores and all that. And I always check, and I checked my breast and I found a lump. I checked again, maybe it's a mistake or something, I don't mm-hmm. know. So I found it like three times, and I called my GP and said, okay, I want to come in, I found a lump. And she was like, okay, come in. So I had just rushed down within the hour and went down there, getting to my GP's place. And she was just checking for like 20 minutes. She couldn't find it. And she asked me, Demi, are you sure you found it? I said, yes. And you must find it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay. After a few minutes, she found one. I only found one when I checked. Mm-hmm. And when she checked, she found another one.
Wow.
So she said, oh, okay. I'll just refer you to James's just to put our mind at rest, see if it's just a lump or... I was like, no, don't say that yet. Let me check first.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, fine. So she referred me. I was waiting for my first appointment to go to James's for about 5 months.
Oh.
Yeah. For 5 months. And between June and November, my head was just all over the place. Could this be? Could it not be? Please don't be. Well, I went in and the breast consultant checked. And yeah, it was like, there's a lump. But you have to come back in for a mammogram, ultrasound, and all that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. So I had to wait again, November, December. And I got the appointment for the mammogram in January. Then did the mammogram, wait for 10 days or so for the result. They found something and they just said, okay, you have to do ultrasound for us to be very sure. So I did that and I did the biopsy. Mm-hmm. Then February 2021, I went in for the results. And he told me, oh, yeah, the lump we found is cancerous and you have stage 2 breast cancer. And I just asked him, are you sure it's me?
Mm-hmm.
He said, yes. Am I going to die? He said, no, it's not late. It's still, we caught it early and I was like, okay. Then I just walked out of the doctor's office and I stay in Balefemo.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospital is James's hospital in Chico.
Yeah.
I just went outside and I started walking home. So it was like halfway home. I'm like, oh, you're walking.
This is a long way.
Yeah. You're walking. I'm like, oh God, yeah. I stopped and I called the hospital again and said, hello, are you sure it's me? And he said, yeah. Okay, fine. I'm walking home then. I just keep walking. So I went straight upstairs and to my room. But beforehand, I told my son, he knows everything that is going on with me. So he knows I'm going for the results. And he saw me go upstairs. He didn't come upstairs to me. I cried for like 20 minutes. And I called him. I said, Tommy, come upstairs. And I told him. The first thing he asked me is my son. He said, are you going to die? That's what I said at the doctor's. And I'm no, more I'm not. Mm-hmm. And it's just stage two. And he wanted to cry, but he couldn't do it in front of me. So he went outside and came back an hour later. He gave me a big hug. And that's how that's how we found out. And from then on, appointments every week to do my lump, start getting ready for the procedure. And that was it.
Yeah, it's a hard diagnosis to have. And it's a hard diagnosis when you are told your treatment plan. As I often say to people, you know, the treatment plan is different for every single person that presents, because genetically we're all very different.
Mm-hmm.
So some go through a lumpectomy, some go through, you know, not having surgery, but just having, you know, chemo and or radiation therapy, hormonal drug therapies, you know. So how did you feel when you were told you had to have a mastectomy?
I cried, because I'm going to say this, my breast is my best possession. That's what I like the most on my body.
Yeah, yeah.
And having to have one off, I couldn't pick a day for the surgery on time. Like, they had to like keep talking to me. There's this the consultants will call me. We have to do, are you ready? I'm like, oh no, I'm not. Then one day I just like, okay, I'm ready. 5th of May, 12 days to my birthday. I picked then. But before then I had a lump, some lump taken out of from the armpit. So a month before, and May 5th, I had my mastectomy. I cried going in. I cried when I woke up. Like, I just went this way. God. And that was it. Then I called my friends that I didn't tell before, and they saw me on the hospital bed. Why are you in the hospital? I'm like, okay, I had breast cancer. I didn't tell you because I'm not ready to tell anybody, some of you yet. And now I'm ready. And on a video call, everybody was crying. I'm like, okay, bye. I'm not crying anymore. I'm done crying for now. So...
And how do you think they reacted? Obviously, they were shocked.
Yeah. Everybody was crying. And some didn't cry right in front of me. They had to go off the phone. And a few hours later, they called me and we talked. Yes, yeah, sad. I think they were just sad it's happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I asked the same question. Why did this happen to me?
Mm-hmm. And there was no history in your family?
There is a history in my family. My aunt died back home. Yeah. But this is me. I'm just asking, why did this happen to me? I'm healthy. I'm this. I go to the gym. I eat okay. And why did you pick me?
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah.
It picked me.
You know, I know you're soon to go for your reconstruction, which is fantastic for you, because it was very important for you to have the reconstruction.
Oh, yes.
At what point did your team talk to you, you know, pre their surgery for your mastectomy or just after that, about the possibility of having a reconstruction?
A pre-surgery.
Okay.
They told me pre-surgery because, first of all, they looked at my, they said I'm young.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I have to. I can't be going around with one boobs like.
Yeah.
So we did the, they told me before, so, pre-mastectomy, so. And so they told me after mastectomy, I have to, I'll get the chemo done, radiotherapy, then wait before my reconstruction.
Okay. Yeah. And do you know what type of reconstruction you're going to go for?
I'm having the,
the DF flap.
DF flap one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where they're using your own tissue and
yes.
your own muscle. Brilliant. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's an exciting, something more to look forward to, I suppose.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to that.
And tell me, how did you tell your family, like family at home? Like, at what point did you tell your mom? And
I told my younger ones as soon as I got the diagnosis, but I didn't tell my mom until after radiotherapy. Because my mom, I know she will be very, very worried if I tell her beforehand, before, like I told her from the beginning. She'll be worried every day, probably be crying every day, be calling me every day, which I really don't want too much calls. So I told my mom after my treatment, then told my younger ones as soon as I got the diagnosis.
So, Demi, you waited some time to tell your mom, I know, because you were fearful that she'd worry so much about your treatment and you yourself had to deal with it. But culturally, I know we've chatted about the African community and their religion playing a massive part of their lives to the extent that science or medicine takes a backseat. Were you fearful?
I wasn't fearful, no, because I believe in God, yeah, and I believe in science. So all I just want is to get well. And I know science and doctors will do that. But God is just for praying for strength, to just give me strength to be able to get well and the strength to be able to get all the treatment in me and be able to get everything, like, just ask God for guidance. That's all I did. But in the African community, the religion part is the most, is the heaviest part. And science, too, they believe in science, but they would, like, rather pray and give you some holy water to drink and tell you, oh, you'll be fine. But science can just take the back seat. So I've heard stories of like people that got the diagnosis and they started praying at home, not going to the hospital early enough to be cured. So, but I didn't do that because I believe more in science. I believe in God as well, but more in science. I just pray to God for guidance, to guide me. So in the community, in African community, people should come out more when they have any kind of diagnosis to encourage other people. And please, as well, science is very, 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 very important. All we just need to do is pray for guidance and they'll both work together. When when you have diagnosis like this, it's not the end of the world. it's just to find a solution to mm-hmm. what the problem is.
It's just so important to understand your own body, understand and know what the symptoms are of breast cancer on a regular basis. You know, check yourself. We would often say, please check yourself monthly. Therefore, if you know what your base normal is, if you spot an abnormality down the way, you will really detect it quite quickly. Yeah. And you'll say, oh, that wasn't there last month. And then you go to your GP like you did, and your outcome, like you, is much, much more positive, which is really important.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, yes, religion is hugely important, as you say, for guidance and hope and to look after you and to give you the strength to get through the journey that you had to go through. Because, I mean, at chemo and radiation therapy, this is grueling time that you did have to go through and you do need support. But science is really so advanced and research has come so such a long way,
yeah.
you know, that people can be helped. And I suppose one of the key things for Breast Cancer Ireland from the start is we are set up to make sure and to really... Our vision is to transform breast cancer from often being a fatal disease, because we do have about 690 deaths annually, into a treatable long-term illness. Mm. And I suppose when you look at the fatalities, these are cases that are caught too late. These are cases where people have either decided, look, it'll go away, I don't want to talk about it, or sure, look, I'll wait till next month, maybe it'll be gone. Or, as you say, for religious reasons, that they really think and pray to God that God will make it go away.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately
yeah.
not the case.
Yeah. Like you said, we know our body very well when something is going on mm-hmm. in the body.
Mm-hmm.
But in my case, I just found a lump. I wasn't having any symptoms. I wasn't tired. There wasn't any change in my breast. There was no tenderness. There was nothing. So I just found it. But some people do have these symptoms and they just shy away from it and say, mm-hmm. oh, I'm just tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just tired. Oh, I have a headache. I will take a paracetamol and I'll mm-hmm. be fine. No.
Mm-hmm.
I think people should stop doing that to themselves
mm-hmm.
because... So, most people just go, I'll just have a line and it will go. And if it's something like what I have, it could be growing mm-hmm. and growing. And you think, until it's very late.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as well, and I think there's a common thread, because I don't think it's very specific to an African community.
Yeah,
people react like that. I think Irish people react like that too.
I think everybody, yeah.
I think everybody does. But I think what we need to try and do is allay their fears and just tell women, and indeed some men, but tell women in general that, you know, understand the 8 signs and symptoms. And that's why I suppose the podcast is called More Than a Lump, because there are other signs and symptoms.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yes, fatigue, tiredness can play a part in the very early stages. But like, you know, we can have dimpling on the breast, which is like cellulite, like orange peel, you know, and that's a tumor on the inside pulling at the breast skin. Mm-hmm. You can have one breast lower than the other, one breast that gets much bigger than the other. You can have a gland in your armpit that's swollen.
Yeah.
You know, you can have nipple discharge, or, you know, the nipple can go inverted or extra outwards. And I suppose they're the things that you just need to know and pick a date and say, well, if I'm looking at myself today, and this is what I see, and this is what I notice.
Yeah.
If I spot anything months down the line, then I know that's a difference.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And I suppose that's something, and I'm delighted you're here with us today, because I think that's something that we really need to empower women
everywhere.
To just be breast aware. You know, take control of their bodies, you know, empower themselves to know what's right and what's not right down the line if something does show up as an abnormality. And really, you know, be strong enough to go to the GP. Don't sweep it under the carpet, because you and I, we all know you detected yours quite quickly.
Mm.
Others don't. And that's where things can have a negative impact.
Yeah.
You know, I'm delighted that you were checking yourself.
I do like check myself almost like every month because of the history in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose Tommy was there, and thankfully he was like 19 when you were diagnosed.
Yeah.
So he must have been your real rock for you during your treatment.
Yeah, he was. It was very, 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 very good with me. There are days I have my bad days. He's there. and the good days is there. He's a very good cook, so he cooks for me.
Yeah. Brilliant.
He's a very good cook, so he cooks for me. And one thing he does again, he comes into my room during chemo. Whenever I'm back from chemo and I'm at home, he comes to my room like every hour. I don't know how he does that. Maybe he has an alarm on his phone to come check. Are you okay? Yes. And sometimes he gives me massages, my feet, when I have the bone pain and all that. So it was very good.
Tell me, you know, how did you feel? Where did you get your inner strength to be able to take this disease head on, cope with the treatment that was down the road for you, which was surgery, it was chemotherapy, it was radiation therapy? How did you deal with that?
First of all, I'm a Mayborn, Taurus bull, so we have the strength to conquer anything. Now, and before my diagnosis, I'm a very, very strong-willed person. I'm very dependent. So when I got my diagnosis, I just thought, oh my God, my life is about to take a pause for like a year. How am I going to do this? So during the chemo period, I love music. So sometimes I get my strength from listening to music. It takes everything off me thinking about the chemo pain or the next treatment or anything. So I listen to music and I don't know how I got the strength from inner me to do it, but I know music played a part. And well, my son do play a part as well, because I have something to live for, my family and myself.
Absolutely.
I'm still young, so I need to do this. So I just eat it head on. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm not dying. I'm going to make sure I'm okay for myself, my family, friends, and my son. So yeah, there are days like, no, I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to do this. I don't want to come out of my bed. But most of the time, when I just think of me, I'm doing this for me. Mm-hmm. Then I just get up and it's the do what I have to do. So, yeah. I get my strength as well from my younger one, especially my younger sister. She calls me and just we talk about growing up things and just what we do. Then that pushes me, talk to my dad. Even I talk to my mom during my chemo, but she doesn't know anything was happening. So she just go, oh, God bless you. I'll be like, hey, amen, I need that. Even though I didn't tell her anything. Mm-hmm. So she just thought, I said, oh, God bless you. I'm like, amen, mom. So just, I think I got my strength from my family, my son, and from myself, mm-hmm. pushing myself to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks to my son, I was able to go through chemo and radiotherapy. Okay.
Super, yeah. It's important. You were so lucky that he was old enough and not like a little teeny tot that you would have to mind him yourself.
And
that
mind
would
myself,
have been much, much harder.
Yeah.
Demi, tell me, if there was a single message that you would like to give to your community, to your family, to relatives, what would you say to them in relation to religion and science?
One thing I would say is religion has its own part to play, but science play the most part of it. Mm-hmm. And God forbid anybody got the diagnosis, anybody I know gets it, go straight to the doctors. Science is key, not the religion is key. It's religion comes in after science. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. just make sure you go to the doctors all the time. Check yourself. Don't be afraid to go to the doctors when you find anything strange in your body. Men or women, we can find anything on our body. Just go straight to the doctors. Mm-hmm. Do not let the religion part of it, like, stop you from going to the doctors. Yeah.
It's a positive story. It's a hopeful story. And it's one, as you say, you detected it early. That's the key. You know, and that's most important, because now your outcome, you've had your mastectomy, you know, you've had all your treatment and you're looking forward to your reconstruction.
Yeah.
And please God, you know, many, many years of happiness with Tommy at home and, you know, moving on with life.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Fantastic. The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.